Lauren Sekulow, Vice President Harris, Jen Psaki, as well as Joe Biden himself, have a little bit of explaining to do on the latest U.S. airstrikes in Syria. We'll talk about that and more today on Sekulow.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
All right, welcome to Sekulow Radio. You know, it's not getting a ton of attention in the news, which is interesting because I'm sure if it was President Trump who sent airstrikes into Syria, specifically to not send them into Iraq, even though that's where the U.S. troops were attacked by Iranian-backed militias. They sent the airstrikes into supposedly a place those militias use that are actually across the border from Iraq in Syria because they don't want to upset the Iranians too much. I mean, I'll read the exact quote from Admiral Kirby, who's back at the Department of Defense as a spokesperson yet again.
I mean, left.
Right. I mean, you know, it's been only 4 years since he had that role, and he's right back again. He went to CNN, and he's back there. But what we're focusing in on is not yet whether or not these were the right strikes. I mean, obviously, we had the U.S. was hit by Iranian-backed militias. It injured some U.S. National Guard. It killed a contractor working with us. So you were going to respond. The question is, do you respond in a way that tries to appease the Iranians? Is that the best way to come out swinging? And then also to point out the hypocrisy. When President Trump said, you know what, you've crossed that red line, Syria, with the use of chemical weapons, we're going to show you what we'll do if you do it again. Here's 100 Tomahawk missiles coming right at you. And then you know what Kamala Harris at the time wrote to that? I've got the tweet in my hand we can put up on the screen for people on Facebook and Periscope. I strongly support our men and women in uniform and believe we must hold Assad accountable for his unconscionable use of chemical weapons. But I'm deeply concerned about the legal rationale of last night's strikes. The president, that's about Trump, needs to lay out a comprehensive strategy in Syria in consultation with Congress. He needs to do it now. She also wrote, yesterday my colleagues and I introduced the No War Against Iran Act, which would deny funds for unauthorized military action in Iran. Congress must act quickly so Trump doesn't unilaterally take our country into another war. That was just from the killing of Soleimani, a targeted attack on the terrorist leader of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. Jen Psaki,
in my favorite
what
one.
Is the legal authority for strikes? Assad is a brutal dictator, but Syria is a sovereign country. Now, I'm going to stop at that one right now, Deb, because these strikes purposely were done, if we believe what Kirby says, in Syria, so our Iraqi allies, who are not so great,
right,
would not be upset, because actually this group is based out of Iraq.
Correct.
So what legal justification was there to hit in Syria when the group is based in Iraq, and they say it's, well, right on the border they use these buildings. Maybe they have it, maybe they don't, but this is hypocrisy.
But I think the biggest thing is not whether the action taken, the military action taken, was appropriate. It may well have been. I have no problem with knocking
Secretary
these out.
Secretary Pompeo say he hopes it wasn't just a bunch of bombs in the desert.
Yeah, he hopes it wasn't bombs in the desert that actually took something out. The hypocrisy, however, which is so prevalent here, is that you have a situation where exactly what President Trump did, President Biden basically did, and Biden's people, including Jen Psaki, were saying, what is the authority to do all of this? And I think it just shows you the nature of the hypocrisy. But the president is the commander-in-chief, Andy. And we only got a minute here. And commander-in-chief has authority.
Yeah, I don't have any doubt that the commander-in-chief has the authority, and I support that authority. But the question is, the hypocrisy that you mentioned that is outstanding. President Trump is criticized for what he did when he made these strikes, question about Syrian sovereignty and so forth. But now it's okay when Biden orders the strike of 7 500-pound bombs in the desert, as Secretary Pompeo says, on what was Psaki called a sovereign country. So which is it going to be? I mean, is it going to be hypocrisy, or is it going to be appeasement of Iran?
Yeah, yeah. Or
is
it going to be reports Kamala Harris had no idea about this and was not happy about it, because she doesn't like these strikes. So maybe she's not as hypocritical as her tweet suggests. But this is the part I can't stand the most. Mr. Kirby said the American retaliation was meant to punish the perpetrators, but not to escalate hostilities with Iran, even though these are Iranian-backed
militias. We'll talk about that coming back from
the break. How gross is that?
That's bad.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Welcome to Seculo. And folks, this is something I think that troubles me the most about these strikes. We might find out that the strikes were great, that they were the right target, and they sent the right message. But it seems like it was, one, trying to, you know, appease. Because it's exactly what Mr. Kirby, John Kirby, Admiral Kirby, who's now back at again as Department of Defense press secretary. Mr. Kirby said that the American retaliation was meant to punish the perpetrators of the rocket attack, which are Iranian-backed militias, but not to escalate hostilities with Iran, with which the Biden administration has sought to renew talks on a nuclear deal that President Donald J. Trump had shelved. Quote, we have acted in a deliberate manner that aims to de-escalate the overall situation in eastern Syria and Iraq. One, I'm not sure whenever a U.S. airstrike de-escalates anything, but number two, I cannot stand this language of, we know that they were Iranian-backed groups. They say that, the Department of Defense. They're not trying to hide that part.
Right.
But yet, we're trying to do it in a way that doesn't upset Iran because we want so badly Iran to come back to the table for us. I mean, this is, again, it points to what we've been discussing with Grinnell, with Pompeo, this idea of almost begging the Iranians to come back to the table, and it just makes America look weak.
I don't know why we have this such a significant desire to increase the level of friendship between the Iranian regime, that's what I'm talking about, not the people, the regime, and the United States. The military action was taken by President Biden was because of what? Action that was taken by Iranian surrogates, troops, against the Americans. When the United States went in under President Trump to Syria, we were going after Syria. Now, no question, Syria is a proxy for Iran. I mean, nobody questions that. But I think we have to be really clear and very real as to what is actually going on here. And from a policy perspective, what they've got to get down, Harry, is what is the policy for the United States in engagement with Iran? Because it is kind of bizarre to say we want to reduce hostilities, so we just did a small missile attack.
Absolutely. So I think it's important to note that the Democrats and the Democrat-controlled media claims that the strikes were highly calibrated and were aimed at de-escalating future conflicts. This means that the Biden administration, in my opinion, has not learned the lesson well of deterrence. Translation, the strikes were justified, in my opinion, But in reality, Biden wants to continue Obama's policy of appeasing Iran. That's the bottom line.
Our new senior counsel for global affairs, former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, was on our broadcast, of course, Monday when we made that announcement that he had joined the ACLJ. And we talked about the attack on the U.S. National Guard and the troops by these Iranian-backed groups and how the Trump administration would have responded. This was before there was any response from the Biden administration. Take a listen.
We made a decision early on in the administration. We made a communication to the Iranians that said, we are not going to allow you to get away with using proxies. What do we mean by that? If a Iraqi Shia militiaman, underwritten by the Iranians, attacks an American soldier in Iraq, we're coming to Iran to impose costs on you. That is hard to do, but we made clear that's what we're going to do. This week you saw this. You saw what looks to have been an Iranian-sponsored attack that injured an American and killed a contractor inside of Iraq. And this administration says we want to go sit at the table and talk to them. Yeah. They will interpret that as a free pass to hurt Americans.
And so not only did they not go into Iran, you know, when this was done by Iran, we took out Soleimani. We took out the leader of their terrorist force, the Revolutionary Guard. And they were pretty quiet after that. They shot a few missiles off from Hamas into Israel, nothing, rockets, and some missiles at us that hit nothing, no casualties. And so it was a very successful, and you heard nothing from the Iran until the Biden administration, of course, comes back in and starts begging at the table. But that is because Iran now knows that when their proxies hit at the U.S., we're not going to go into Iran, like Mike Pompeo said. Iran knew from the Trump administration that if you use your proxies outside of Iran, we're going to take the fight back inside Iran. We're going to take out Soleimani. We're going to take out leadership. We're going to hurt, punish you, not just bomb some random place in Syria,
right,
where those proxies are. We're going to take it to the heart of the problem. And that led to a more peaceful Middle East with Iran on the brink of economic collapse.
This is the thing that I find interesting. We're going to Andy and Than on this, because you look at again, I'm not challenging President Biden's decision to do the missile attack.
Yeah. The way they explain it's
doing
ridiculous.
It in Syria versus in Iraq, I get it, but not really, because Syria is a sovereign nation, as Jen Psaki was so upset about last time.
Yes.
When
so
she wasn't
was,
president, Joe Biden. And so was Joe Biden, but not so much anymore. But our military did, I'm sure, a good job. The point is, what is the policy? What is the American policy in engagement with Iran? And the truth of the matter is, you don't get it both ways. Crippling sanctions brought Iran to their knees. Now, Joe Biden has already said, Andy, the president, has already said that through his spokespeople that they want to go back to a discussion with the Iranians. However, they acknowledged that they are currently and have not been in compliance with the JCPOA. Now, they weren't in compliance with the JCPOA. It's not because the Americans walked out. Because the Europeans are still involved. They're in compliance with the JCPOA because the Europeans let them do it because of the economic trade between these countries. Ambassador Grinnell, our special senior advisor on foreign policy, who was the ambassador to Germany, noted that. So, you know, this Iran policy issue, I think we had a uniting Middle East coming together, which I hope this administration doesn't destroy. I don't think they can, because I think it's here to stay. But boy, they're sending these mixed signals at an early stage here are very dangerous politically.
That's true, Jay. I mean, we don't really have a coherent policy that we're exercising toward Iran and ultimately deterring and stopping their conduct. I think Secretary Pompeo was correct in saying and asking the not-so-rhetorical question, is this really bombs in the desert? I mean, you cannot appease dictatorial regimes by simply taking token actions against them for what we know are terrorist-sponsored activities engaged in by their surrogates that happened in Erbil. And we now are taking these actions that are really not coherent. In a sense, what happened last night at 2 a.m. their time was a laughable act. Because we did not have bomb. We exercised the authority through the president, which I don't doubt that he has the authority, to send bombs on a desert outpost somewhere in the middle of nowhere. But you didn't really look at the real perpetrator, and that's Iran. You've given them a free pass. Yet again, the Biden administration has done that. That is not good. The Trump administration gave a very powerful signal to the Iranians for backing terrorist organizations and for taking terrorist activities under their wing and for promulgating them. This, I think, that the President Biden did does not really prove anything but a weakness on his part to engage in acts that are really showmanship and not something substantive.
I don't know if we've heard from Lindsey Graham yet on this. We'll take a look. But, Than, what are you hearing in Washington? Now, this got very little coverage in the mainstream media. Very little.
Yeah, very little, Jay. There are two main problems that the administration has from my perspective in Washington, D.C., and it's kind of on two different sides of the coin. The first one you all have touched on with quite a bit of depth, the hypocrisy and the inconsistency here is going to really wreak havoc on them. And they've already got core supporters like Ilhan Omar saying, you know, what in the world is going on here? You said that you didn't have this authority and now you're using it. What's the story here? That's going to be a problem for them. But Jay, in my view, the bigger problem is this idea they're now trying to convince policymakers that airstrikes are somehow a tool of de-escalation. Look, I mean, we've been one of the voices on the right being very clear about the authority to use airstrikes, but make no mistake about it. An airstrike has to be a tool of deterrence. I thought Secretary Pompeo said it very well. It can't just be bombs in the desert. It actually has to accomplish a means that advances the interests of the United States. Nobody in the world, Jay, is going to believe that an airstrike is somehow an act of diplomacy or an act of de-escalation. But look, they're going to have a big problem with this because not only have they been hypocritical, but the messaging on it is inconsistent. And Jay, they've really lost people on all sides of the issue.
Harry, I want to go quickly to you and then Jordan, you finish this segment up. But from a policy standpoint, again, I point to the inconsistency of the policy, which is going to be particularly dangerous if they are going to try any kind of negotiations with Iran.
I think that's true. And I think basically what the Biden administration has done is that they have prepared an open door for a future Iranian aggression.
Yeah, that's what I think it is, Jordan.
No, I think, listen, ultimately here you have people like Joe Biden himself during the campaign said this afternoon, I'll be discussing Donald Trump's recent actions in Syria, how his erratic, impulsive decisions endanger our troops and make us all less safe. How was it, you know, what was making our troops less safe? Biden comes in and the first strikes on U.S. troops happened under his watch in months. I mean, months, if not years. There haven't been strikes on U.S. troops acting in that region based from Iranian militias since we took out Soleimani. And those were very minor because we took out Soleimani and they still have a problem in running their Revolutionary Guard. So this tit for tat, I just can't stand.
No, that's, I don't like
it. I don't like getting our military stuck in. Trying to play on the same field as these proxy terrorist groups.
By the same rules, almost.
Yes, right. We'll hit you. We'll just
barely,
we'll
and then you'll barely hit, barely. Us.
This is leading towards a bad path and a bad outcome.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
Secular. So we talked to serious strikes, we talked to COVID relief, and now I want to get to the phones, 1-800-684-3110. We're going to go in order of people that have been on the line. Let's start first with Mike in Missouri on line two. Hey, Mike.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Happy Friday to you.
Thanks, Mike.
With this thing going through with the raising the minimum wage, we know businesses are going to raise their prices because they're not going to take the hit. What's going to happen to us on fixed incomes? What are they going to do for us?
Well, I mean, you're going to spend more for a product.
Right, this minimum wage hike is not getting through. So I want to make that clear to people. It just got shut down. It would have to go through as a separate than as a actual piece of legislation, not through budget reconciliation. So to get this minimum wage hike, which they wanted over 4 years, which would kill jobs, because we're already at a time where people have lost those jobs. And, you know, I'll even listen to these like liberal commentators. They're like, hey, these jobs are already gone anyways. You know, so in a sense, it's not really going to hurt the economy that bad because there's so few of these jobs left.
Well, first of all, on the impact of a raise of the minimum wage, a mandated raise of the minimum wage, Jordan, the CBO, which is not exactly a conservative organization, they said it would cost 1.4 million jobs if that increase were to go through. And what was the response from Senate Democrats? Ron Wyden said, OK, that's fine. We'll do it another way. We'll just levy a heavy tax on these businesses that won't raise the minimum wage. But look, that's the doom and gloom, Jordan. I think the optimistic point is the one you just made. The Senate parliamentarian said they can't do it under reconciliation, so it's not going to be passed in this bill. There probably will be a debate, Jordan, but look, that'll be a debate that'll have to clear a 60-vote threshold, and it'll be a debate that has to, again, start anew and pass the House and the Senate.
All right, folks, we're going to continue to take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Lewis called in from Colorado on line four. Hey, Lewis.
Hey, I just wrote out my check to you folks.
Thank you.
Listen, why is it just the $15? What about everything else? The bridge in New York, the tunnel in California, money going overseas. How come they didn't say anything about that? That's supposed to be in this bill.
Well, you know, the big thing was the $15 minimum wage, but this has been a huge criticism, Than, of the entire COVID relief. They don't want to even call it that. It's now about rescuing America, and it's bigger than COVID. That's how Democrats are trying to spin it. So it's not just about COVID relief, though. That's what it is supposed to be about. But Lewis is right. There's all this other pork in there that's led even people like Mitt Romney. They say it's a clunker, this piece of legislation, which is why it's hard to get it through with reconciliation even.
Jordan, only about 30% of this bill is actually related to COVID, and that portion had wide bipartisan support. That's why it could have passed weeks and weeks ago. The rest of it, somewhere around 70%, depending on how you calculate it, is on unrelated stuff. And the caller's exactly right. I mean, the minimum wage is the provision that has run afoul of what's known as the bird provision. They call it the bird bath. But Jordan, a lot of the other stuff that does have a budgetary impact, so, you know, technically, procedurally, rules-wise, it can move in this package. A lot of it is just an absolutely terrible idea. I mean, crushing to the economy. And I think, Jordan, you know, one of those ideas, I think it's worth mentioning this again. We on this broadcast have advocated for federal dollars to help schools open many times before. Democrats are saying that's in the bill. There's $130 billion in there. Jordan, again, the CBO took a look at it. You know how much of that $130 billion can be spent this year to actually help schools open? 5%. 5%. The rest of it is for out years pet projects inside the education space.
This is, Andy, this is exactly the problem. When you have legislation that's not focused on solving the problem, but rather is a social agenda as Jordan said, kind of a, you know, national change on other projects now beyond COVID, this is where it gets very dangerous very quickly because nothing gets done.
Well, this is exactly what Harry Hutchison said. The Democrat left hard left, has a social agenda that they intend to pass, and they're going to persist in it no matter what happens. Whether it's for the good of the American people or not, they already know it's for the good of the American people. The elitists have made the decision that the 15-hour minimum wage is what it's going to be, and no matter what happens, that they're going to persist in that, knowing that Kristen Sinema is not going to vote for that in the Senate, nor is Joe Manchin. They're going to persist in it. They get a blow from the parliamentarian in the Senate that says it's not germane, but it doesn't in the House, and it cannot be tacked on to the COVID relief legislation. But nonetheless, they're persisting, and they're going through with this no matter what. They're going to vote this through, and they're going to send it over to the Senate where it's dead on arrival. Meanwhile, what happens to the servers at the Colonnade restaurant in Atlanta, Georgia, or any other place?
You know, this again, you know, it brings all these different stories and all this different spending. Does it actually ever get out to the American people? Is it also corrupt? And Than, you brought up too, the Title 10 Plus is up as well. And explain people what's going on there. There's lawsuits going on there about whether or not Planned Parenthood should get funding again. And Planned Parenthood is being joined by the Biden administration, even though Title 10 funding says no funding to abortion providers.
Right.
Yeah, the law says no funding to abortion providers. We fought that over the years. We've been winning. The Trump administration was very effective in applying the law. And essentially what it meant, Jordan, is that the law was rightly applied and Planned Parenthood was deprived of about $60 million a year that they were not entitled to under the law. Jordan, this COVID bill actually attempts to plus up the Title 10 account by a $50 million amount. And look, I mean, this is transparent. They may or may not tell you this, but I can tell you why that plus up is in there. That's a prorated payment to Planned Parenthood for what they lost under the Trump administration. They're trying to move that inside a COVID stimulus package. You tell me, Jordan, what does $50 million for Planned Parenthood have to do with COVID relief?
Nothing. And what does $50 million for Planned Parenthood, Harry, have to do with opening up public schools that need to be open for the kids to be served?
Absolutely nothing.
Right.
But I think the real problem is that the Democrats, they prioritize union leaders rather than union members. They prioritize the radical left and eugenics supporters rather than the American people. And at the end of the day, they prioritize global elites rather than putting America first.
You know, I think that the whole issue here is exactly what Harry says. It's all about getting it to their friends and allies. How much can we dole out billions and millions and billions of dollars to our friends and allies, businesses and organizations we like? So it's Planned Parenthood, of course. They're all in the back pocket of Planned Parenthood. We haven't even gotten to Javier Becerra's nomination to lead HHS yet today. But guess what? Like Tandon's nomination, which is in doubt, now his is facing some uncertainty, Than, because you know that. We all know that because he could have had the vote today, and they've kicked it to sometime next week, haven't even scheduled it.
What does that mean, Than?
Well, he went through his two hearings today. We obviously weighed in opposition to it. Look, he's absolutely terrible on the life issue. But Jay and Jordan, the reason his nomination is in trouble in the United States Senate with people like Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema and Bob Casey is because he doesn't have a lick of public health experience. In the middle of a pandemic, you're going to nominate a secretary to the Department of Health and Human Services, have a leading role in trying to pull us out of the COVID pandemic, not a lick of public health experience. That's why his nomination is in jeopardy in the United States Senate. And I'll just tell you, his nomination should be rejected. He should not be the next secretary.
We beat him in court, but you know what? In the Supreme Court, but it was on an issue where he was trying to force abortion clinics to provide, to tell people where to go get abortions. I mean, this is the guy that's going to head up HHS. Maybe not.
Well, I think that, listen, I think it's a, there are people now where you're seeing when you have a 50-50 Senate, you fight. You fight those nominees who are Twitter trolls. You fight the nominees who are pro-abortion advocates like Becerra with no experience during a pandemic. And they would criticize Azar, who had already been the deputy HHS director, general counsel for HHS, but he wasn't good enough for the left. Well, Becerra certainly isn't. He has no experience compared to who was leading it under the Trump administration. We will talk about all this tomorrow.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.